Hello, it's Wednesday the 7th of April. I'm Andrew Pearce and this is The Andrew Pearce Show and it's coming from the Daily Mail newsroom. Money worries. A lot of people have really, really got into financial difficulties during the lockdown. We're going to be talking to a professor of psychology of money from the Open University. Are you one of those people waiting for a refund from your holiday? Because if you are, you could have a longer wait. We'll tell you more about that. We'll be talking about how the English clubs fared in Europe last night. Prince Harry, his Netflix deal. He's going to be talking all about his charity, Invictus. But first, the AstraZeneca jab. Is it still safe to use? So the British medical regulator suggested that the AstraZeneca vaccine is best not to be used by people under the age of 30. Several countries have already limited the jab's use to older age groups. The European medicine regulator is not making any such recommendation. So should we have anything to worry about if people like me have already had one AstraZeneca jab and I'm considerably over the age of 50. I'm joined now by Dr. Peter English. He's a retired consultant in communicable disease control and former chairman of the BMA Public Health Medicine Committee. Dr. English, it's clear there have been a number of people who've had blood clots, who've had the AstraZeneca vaccine. Has the regulator today been clear whether that is definitely to do with the vaccine or not?
No, it's too soon to be certain. What they're saying is that it seems possible this is caused by the vaccine. And there's possibly a small excess of cases in people who've had the vaccine, but it's not definite as yet.
And the number is very, very small. I mean, the word used again and again has been rare.
Yes, these are tiny numbers compared to the huge numbers of people who've been given the vaccine.
And so in your view, is the regulator right to recommend that people under 30 should perhaps have a different vaccine, Pfizer or Moderna, which has come on stream today? Is that the right advice, or are you worried that that could perhaps panic people about the AstraZeneca jab?
Well, as far as we're aware, this side effect doesn't happen with those vaccines, and the risks of these clotting seem to be higher in younger people, and the benefits of the vaccine are lower, since they're less likely to die or be admitted to hospital. So it's not an unreasonable response. They didn't say that the vaccine shouldn't be used.
No.
That you shouldn't delay getting vaccinated if you can't get hold of alternative vaccines. But if other vaccines are available for that age group, then they should be used in preference, is what they're saying.
There was also a suggestion, I think, that the risk is more prominent in women.
Yes. The risk of this condition is more common in women, regardless of whether they get the vaccine. If there is an increase in the risk with the vaccine, then you might see it more in women because they're more susceptible to this condition in the first place.
Do we know why that's the case of women?
It has to do with hormone levels probably, and pregnancy and childbirth also come into it because those also increase your risk of clotting disorders.
So people listening to this, Dr. English, there's still nothing to worry about as far as you're concerned, having heard the experts wheeled out today about the AstraZeneca jab, and people like me who've already had one jab should carry on and have the second one, and other people who are offered the jab should take it.
Well, there's not a huge amount to worry about. It's probably less than the risk of getting a gastric bleed if you take an aspirin tablet, and probably considerably less than the risk of being involved in a road traffic collision when you drive your child to school in the morning. So it's as the risks that we take routinely in our lives go, it's a pretty low level risk.
And the Moderna vaccine has come on stream now. We've seen a fall off in the last few days in the number of vaccines that have been administered. Doctor, is that because of shortages in the vaccine, or do you think that may possibly be due to the fact some people have become more reluctant to be vaccinated because they may have been hearing stuff about AstraZeneca or reading stuff, particularly on the dreaded internet, and have held back from being vaccinated?
As I understand it, people are still very keen to get vaccinated as soon as they can. The problems have been, as they have been all along, with getting the vaccine out there quickly enough. It's been a problem of vaccine supply rather than anything else.
And just finally, Doctor, the European Medicines Agency, again, has in their statement today, they say the benefit of the vaccine substantially outweighs the risks.
Yes, and I think that's pretty much what John Van Tam was saying in his presentation as well. The benefits substantially outweigh the risks. But if you have the choice in people under the age of 30, use a different vaccine as long as you're not delaying them getting vaccinated.
All right. Well, that's very good to talk to you. That's Dr. Peter English, a retired consultant in communicable disease control, and he's the former chairman of the BMA Public Health Medicine Committee. Now, why don't you visit melplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. So Prince Harry's first show for the streaming giant Netflix, he's been paid an awful lot of money by Netflix, is going to be a documentary series about the Invictus Games. This, of course, follows injured and disabled military veterans as they train for the next Games, which are due to take place, pandemic withstanding, in 2022. The Prince will appear on camera, and Archwell Productions is to give money to the Invictus Games Foundation, which Harry set up for injured servicemen and women. I'm joined now by Victoria Murphy, the Royal Author and writer for Town and Country. Victoria, this is his first big project since he's abandoned ship in Britain, and Invictus is a cause very close to his heart.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's attracting a lot of attention because it is the first thing that Harry and Meghan have announced. Obviously, the deal with Netflix itself was announced back in September last year, rumoured to be worth anything up to $150 million. But we don't know that because Harry and Meghan are not required to disclose any of that information. They're not taking any public money. They're very much outside of the royal system. So they are able to keep this deal to themselves and the specifics of it to themselves. But this is the first series that they have announced as part of this multi-year production deal with Netflix. And it is appropriately going to be focused on something that, as you say, is very close to Harry's heart. And I think that was one of the real challenges for Harry and Meghan when they left, was wanting to keep the projects that they had worked on. And as we've seen over the course of the year, there's been a process where they've been able to keep some and not others. But it was very clear very early on that the Invictus Games was always going to stay with Harry. He set it up in 2014. It's very important to him, and he's lived the life of a soldier, and it's very connected to that world. And so he's going to be involved in this production. He's going to be an executive producer. He won't be directing it. They've hired external directors, but he is going to be very involved and also appear on camera alongside these competitors as we kind of follow their journey.
Is it going to be a one programme, Victoria, or is it going to be a series of programmes following some of these athletes?
The impression is that we're getting is it's going to be a series, so it's kind of documentary series, which will follow. All we know at the moment is it's going to follow the competitors who are set to take part in the Invictus Games, as you say, scheduled for 2022, been postponed for 2 years. I think the intention is to very much focus on their stories, which we've seen Harry and Meghan do before, and we've seen Harry do with previous Invictus Games. But of course, this is the first time that they'll be doing it outside of the royal fold when they're not working royals. And I think what's interesting about it is that Invictus Games is one of the things I think that it is easier for them to transport into their new lives. It's a hugely popular event. There's a huge amount of backing for it and for the people who take part in it. And it has always been run as an event slightly separate anyway to the day-to-day royal duties that members of the royal families carry out. So it does actually transport very well in that sense. And Harry's able to kind of use his profile in a similar way to the way that he did in the royal household. But obviously what we've seen in the course of the last year is that not everything has been able to move across with them in that way. And there's other duties, other responsibilities that they're not able to do because they're not working royals anymore.
Interesting. And just finally on this, it's quite a coup, Victoria, isn't it? Because they've attracted Joanna Natasiagra, I may have pronounced that incorrectly, whose documentary film The White Helmets won an Oscar in 2017. So the name and the power of HRH Prince Harry clearly resonates in Hollywood, because that's quite a coup to get such a decorated filmmaker on board for their first big project.
Very much so. And Harry and Meghan are absolute A-listers, and I think that's where the dilemma lies for a lot of people, because that's where the conflict is. For some people, they will always perceive this couple as cashing in on their royal status, yeah, because they have the profiles that they have because they belong to the royal family. But other people will say, well, you know, they can't do anything about that. And it's the system, not them, that has created that situation. And they're not taking any public money. So why shouldn't they be able to get on and do the projects that they want to do? And you can see that the public is very divided on this, as they are with many things to do with Harry and Meghan. I think personally, I think the kind of tipping point for a lot of people will be if they start to produce programming that is talking about the royal family, talking, yeah, about their royal status. But while they're sticking to programming that is about the issues, then I think there is a defence there that they can't really do anything about the link, and they're not overtly exploiting it by talking about it in some kind of programming that is about the royals themselves.
Yes, it'll be very interesting to see, Victoria, won't it, what they do after Invictus. Do they do something which looks into the House of Windsor? Because that will go down very badly, I would think, with some
exactly,
people.
Exactly, and I think people will be keeping a close eye on that, yeah.
Absolutely. That's Victoria Murphy, royal author and writer for Town and Country. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoy The Andrew Pearce Show, we'd like you to subscribe to us. We'd like you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google or Spotify. And you can always get in touch by tweeting us at Mail Plus or me at Tory Boy Pearce. So are you waiting for a refund for a holiday cancelled because of the wretched pandemic? Because if you are, sadly, you're not alone. A Money Mail poll today shows 1 in 10 of us still haven't been refunded for holidays, concerts and other cancelled bookings. Apart from being infuriating, is there anything you can do about it? I'm joined now by Money Mail reporter Fiona Parker. Fiona, that was interesting. A survey of more than 1,000 people, 12% of those still waiting for their cash for more than a year.
It's a pretty serious situation, Andrew. You know, these will be holidays that were maybe booked for March 2020, weren't able to go ahead, of course, because of the lockdown, and some of these holidaymakers are still waiting for their money, and obviously 12% of those still waiting now have been waiting for a year, so it's pretty serious.
The financial watchdog, the CMA, that's under pressure now to threaten more firms with court action, because I know you've reported this in Money Mail before, sometimes airlines and holiday companies are just offering a voucher instead of a refund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the case. It's the Competition and Markets Authority. It's actually the kind of competition watchdog.
Right.
But its remit is so big that it also covers this. And of course, this is now a massive scale. You know, there are so many people waiting for refunds. It has gone after certain firms, including lastminute.com, which it prompted a big payout and a commitment to clear its refund backlog. But also Teletext Holidays, yeah, which it threatened with court action last month. However, that firm has yet to confirm that it will be refunding all of its customers by a certain date.
And there's some pretty big amounts here. You report on Louise Hastings, for instance. She's waiting for a £790 refund from Teletext Holidays, and she's been waiting for that for more than a year. That's a lot of money.
Poor Louise. She actually worked for a bank herself, and she'd been really looking forward to going on holiday with her boyfriend. Now, I think that holiday was due to take place in May last year. And when Teletext cancelled it, she was actually quite understanding and said, you know, listen, I don't mind waiting a bit. And the firm actually said, well, you're not going to get your money back until the end of 2020. But now, of course, she's still ringing the firm and there's no given date. And she's just finding a lot of the customer service team are quite rude and abrupt. And she, like many others, is just wondering, will she ever get her money back?
Now, you've put some very important tips for people there. So if an airline cancels a flight to or from a UK or EU airport, you are entitled to a refund within 7 days. What happens, though, Fiona, if the airline don't cough up?
Well, you are indeed. And I would say as well, with the exceptional circumstances, you may be waiting a little longer than 7 days. If the airline don't cough up, I'd say keep chasing them, you know, if it really does get to a last resort situation and you just don't feel you're getting anywhere with the company, it could be worth seeing if you can make a claim through the small claims court. Sometimes even submitting a claim will mean your refund request will be escalated up to the legal team or maybe the CEO's team. They will then look at it and they may decide that actually it's worth just paying you the refund quickly and swiftly, rather than going through all the process of going to court, which they know they would probably lose anyway.
And you also make the point too, Fiona, if you've spent more than £100 on a credit card for your holiday or concert, whatever the transaction is, you could be able to claim against the card provider.
It is a very, very useful consumer tool, Andrew, the Section 75. If you contact your credit card provider, such as maybe Barclaycard, obviously it has to be the card that you paid with for the holiday, and you say, I want to make a Section 75 claim, I wasn't able to use this service, the holiday was cancelled, flights were grounded, etc., they will then be able to contact the airline's bank themselves and potentially set you up with a refund.
And just finally, Fiona, if people are offered vouchers by an airline, can they stick to their guns and say, no, I want the cash?
Andrew, if the airline has ever cancelled the flight themselves, then you should always say, I want the cash. If it's a situation where potentially you don't feel too comfortable going on the holiday anymore, but the flight still takes off, that might be a different situation. That might be better if you take that credit or take that voucher and use it for another booking. But if the airline has cancelled the flight, you are entitled to that cash and you need to demand it.
All right, that's Money Mail reporter Fiona Parker with some very good tips and advice on what to do if you're still waiting for your refund. So Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatwood's here with the latest sports news. Well, it's just as well I didn't ask Matt for a tip on the score for Liverpool playing Real Madrid, because I don't know what he'd have said, but they lost pretty badly, didn't they, Matt?
They did. They did. If you'd have asked me, I probably would have predicted about 3-1 to Real Madrid, which is actually the way it turned out.
Yeah.
So, but you didn't. But yes, they did. It was a terrible night for Liverpool, actually. They, you know, we thought when they played at the weekend and they beat Arsenal 3-0, we thought they might be back to their best and over this blip that they'd had, which has meant that they can no longer win the league, etc. And they looked like they might have been returning to their best, but then they were woeful last night in the first half against Real Madrid in Madrid, and they've given themselves a mountain to climb in the second leg, which is next week. Finished 3-1 in the end. They got themselves back into it when Mo Salah scored, but then they conceded a third, which really makes next week tough. Now, if they were playing at a full Anfield with the crowd behind them, I mean, we know that in the past they've had these miracle nights at Anfield where they've overturned big deficits before, but because there's no fans there, you just feel that it may be too much to ask.
Manchester City did a bit better, but not brilliantly either, were they?
Well, City did better in as much as they won 2-1 at home against Borussia Dortmund. Obviously, this was billed as everyone was watching this Erling Haaland kid, this Norwegian kid who...
Because he played for Borussia.
He plays for Borussia Dortmund. Right. Everyone's after him. He's going to be sold in the summer. Man City, you know, potentially could sign him. He's going to cost around $150 million.
And
he is a wonderful... Blimey. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I know. You and I combined wouldn't go for that. But,
150 million.
I know, ridiculous. But he is a wonderful player.
Yeah, well, he should be at that price.
He should be at that price. And he looked good last night. But City won 2-1, but Dortmund got the away goal, and they'll go back to Germany next week. And they'll be quietly confident that you know, they can turn it round. So it's not job done by any stretch for City. There's still work to do. But
and this
you know,
is the quarterfinal, isn't
we're
it?
We're at the quarterfinal stage. Yeah. So, it's interesting. They're both ties. You know, you'd fancy City and you'd fancy Real Madrid, but both ties could change next week.
So this footballer that may go for 150 million, Matt, he's obviously world famous, even though I've never heard of him. How big a figure is he then in the world of sport?
Well, he's going to be big, you know. He's obviously there's lots of all the big clubs are after him, and he's a superstar already. You know, this kid is only 20, but he's an absolute superstar already, to the extent that even the officials last night's game wanted his autograph. There's some brilliant pictures of the cameras in the tunnel after the game. The linesman stopped Erling Haaland and asked him if he wouldn't mind signing an autograph for him. So he took out a red and a yellow card, which obviously the linesman must carry spare cards, and he asked Haaland to sign his name on both the red card and then the yellow card. Now, whether they were for his son or for a friend, I don't know, but it's not a great look for one of the officials to be
really
so in awe of a player.
Really tacky, because you wonder then if he's ever going to make him offside.
Well, exactly, yeah. Well, he did me a favour, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to put my flag up sort of thing. So not a great look for that official, who was obviously starstruck. But
yeah, and if I was the footballer, I'd have said, clear off, I'm not going to sign a red card. Isn't that what you get if you're sent off?
Well, it is. What, exactly, yeah. But then maybe you thought, well, if I'm borderline offside, this guy might keep his flag down.
Very good point. Now, it's Augusta, which means the Masters.
Yep.
Very good. Bryson DeChambeau. What a wonderful name.
Indeed.
Is he the front runner to win? Is he an American?
Yeah, he's an American, yeah. Dubbed the Mad Scientist, and a fascinating character who's making all the headlines around golf over the last couple of years, because he's just has this completely unique approach to the game, whereby he really is a scientist. I mean, he's a sort of physics graduate, and he really studies the game and looks for little ways that he can improve, ways he can push boundaries, ways that so at the moment, for example, and it gets quite technical because he is quite technical about these things, but he's working on ways of improving the speed of the swing of his club.
Yeah.
His reasoning is, if I can get it quicker, I can hit the ball further. Right. And therefore, you know, eventually I can shoot lower scores. So he's really looking at plotting his way around Augusta in a different way to anyone else by hitting it over trees in ways that other players might go around them. Right. So he's really kind of giving those that run the sport a chance to sit up and take notice and think, blimey, you know, do we have to change the courses? Yeah. Do we have to change layouts? So he's a fascinating character.
And Rory McIlroy. Now, is this the one Masters, the big one, he's not won?
This is the one major he hasn't won. Yeah, major, that's right. Yeah. He needs this to complete his Grand Slam.
Yeah.
He's been close, but he hasn't been close for a while. He's probably even himself would admit he's an outsider for this. I mean, the bookies have him down as short odds because they always do, but he really is not in a position where you'd think he'd contend. So he's just hired a new swing coach who's dealing with his short game. This was only 2 weeks ago, so the fact that he's hired a new coach 2 weeks before...
Yeah, that's a pretty worrying sign, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly,
Is this the chap who put a golf ball in a swimming pool?
He may well have done, yeah.
I remember seeing an image of it on the TV and I thought, well, I mean... How would he ever get the ball out of the swimming pool?
Yeah,
because I don't suppose he dived in.
No, you wouldn't dive in. No. I missed that. If he went
I
into
think
a,
he did because,
right,
because that's why it sort of rings a bell that there was a problem with his swing.
Well, yeah, exactly. So he's hired this new swing coach, Pete Cowan, who's got a great record with some of the top golfers. But yeah, 2 weeks before a major, you'd think, well, that's not enough time to kind of make the changes that he would feel he needs to make. And in fact, Rory himself admitted that yesterday, saying that, you know, it's in the early stages of his work with Pete Cowan, and therefore...
He's getting his excuses in before
he almost
hits the first ball, isn't
he? Almost is, but maybe whenever Rory turns up at the Masters in Augusta, there's this huge pressure on him. There's all this talk about, can he win the slam? Can he win the slam? And he always says, well, I'll do my best, you know, I want to, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this year he's under the radar, no pressure on him, no one expects him to do well. Maybe he'll go and win it.
Prediction?
Not,
who's going to win?
Not Rory.
Any Brits? No Brits?
To be honest, it's not... You can't... Even away from the Americans, it doesn't look good. The field is packed full of Americans at the top of the world rankings at the moment.
Right.
And you'd fancy one of them. So you'd fancy someone like Dustin Johnson, who won it last year and who is the world number one. And then there's people like Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, all Americans. Bryson DeChambeau will be fascinating to watch how he goes, whether he tries to whack it here, there and everywhere, and how successful he is. For the Brits, it's hard. Matt Fitzpatrick, maybe. I'll go for Matt Fitzpatrick in the top 10, as good as it gets for the British angle.
Bryson DeChambeau, it's a great name, isn't it?
Wonderful name, yeah.
Fascinating. I'll look out for him. That's Matt Gatwood giving me my usual tuition in sport. So the pandemic, the wretched pandemic, has made most of us, if not all of us, more anxious about money, according to research by Money Supermarket. They found that nearly a third of us, 29% that is, are checking our banking apps or our bank balance out of pure anxiety. Half of respondents, 52%, can find thinking about finances makes them feel anxious. I'm joined now by Professor Mark Fenton-O'Creevy of the Open University, who's an expert in the psychology of money. Professor, it's been tough for everybody the last year. Some people, of course, financially are probably a lot better off because they've not had to pay commuting costs to work. They may have been working from home. They're not buying expensive lunches and all that sort of stuff. Others, of course, have been on furlough, have lost their jobs. But would you agree with that research by Money Supermarket that there is definitely a perceptible sense of anxiety about money and prospects?
Yeah, I think that's right. So, of course, you're right. There are some people who've been more financially affected than others. But in terms of creating money anxiety, stress out of a financial affairs, there's two things at work here, I think. One is real impacts on people's financial situation, and the other is uncertainty. And I think it's really telling that nearly a third of people describe themselves as constantly worrying about their job security. So that there's a lot of people who are keenly aware that as we come out of lockdown and money for furlough expires and so on, that there's a lot of economic uncertainty around, and a lot of people will be feeling very anxious about what's going to happen to them economically, what's going to happen to their jobs, what's going to happen to the cost of living and so on. And you know, families with more than one person earning, then that in a sense that kind of multiplies up the uncertainty as well.
I guess also, I wonder if this is a factor as well, Professor. People will hear regularly how much debt the government has got the country into. I'm not saying that in a pejorative way, but currently, is it £2 trillion? Is it £2.5 trillion? It's figures that are beyond comprehension. I wonder if that feeds into people's sense of personal anxiety, because I think not only are they worried about their own money, the country's broke.
I think that's got to be a factor. I mean, people are thinking about the general economy, but if, for example, you're working in the public sector, then you've got to be concerned about what's going to be happening as the government tries to tighten its belt, and that must create considerable anxiety about job security within the public sector as well, on top of all of the economic uncertainties for people in the private sector.
Now, you're coming up, Professor, with practical tips, I think, to try to help people who are suffering from money anxiety. What sort of advice would you give? And I think there's a calculator which is being provided too, to help people who are worried about financial stress.
Yes. So on the Money Supermarket site is their money stress test, which I've supported them in building, and is based on research they carried out with some advice from me. And it gives people a way of just getting a sense of where they stand in terms of the level of financial stress over the last year. A lot of the advice is as much as it always has been in terms of managing financial anxiety. I mean, the first thing, of course, is to be prepared to get to grips with where you actually are, a really worrying issue in some of the research that Money Supermarket have been doing is that 18% of people, I think, are talking about finding it that they at times they're not opening bills or financial statements because of how concerned they are about what might be in them. So the issue here, of course, is that faced with money concerns, the worst thing you can do is try and pretend it's not happening.
Yeah, of course. You've got to confront it. And if people realise, Professor, that they are perhaps in debt or think they're about to go into debt, what is your advice to them then? Because presumably, unless they can get another job, or maybe they're not even working at all, I mean, how can you help those people? Because the last thing we want them to do is to fall into the hands of somebody like Wonga. I know they're not around anymore, but a company like that charging exorbitant interest rates.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing to say is there's lots of sources of advice around. And by the way, you know, along with that test on the Money Supermarket site are links to some of those sources of advice. But the Money Advice Service, for example, has very good information on budgeting advice with what happens, what are the approaches to take if you get into debt and where you can get help with that and so on from good reputable sources. I think the first step is recognizing that there's an issue. And the second step is starting to look for those sources of advice and those people who really can help. But I think there's something else to say here, which is that, you know, I think one of the things this research suggests is that there's there's a lot of people who are very financially anxious who are not yet in financial difficulty. And, you know, anybody like yourself who works in this area knows very well the importance of building up financial buffers. And my own research around people's financial attitudes suggests something very, very simple. It's kind of obvious, which is that people who see money more as a source of security, as opposed to people who see money as about freedom, as about power, as about love and generosity, are much less likely to get into financial trouble. And the reason for that is that they're motivated to put money away for a rainy day. And building up a financial buffer against unexpected events is probably one of the most sensible things anyone can do to reduce their financial anxiety before bad things happen.
Very good advice, Professor. That was Professor Mark Fenton O'Creevy of the Open University, who is an expert in the psychology of money. Get experts for everything these days. And that's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, please download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.